It's not often a Supreme Court justice bullies the publishing industry into printing something she didn't even write, but that's exactly what Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg did. The book, Some Memories of a Long Life, is a 200-page memoir written by Malvina Harlan, the wife of Supreme Court Justice John Marshall Harlan. It's an account of the extraordinary times in which the Harlans lived, the Civil War and its aftermath, and a description of Malvina Harlan's life as the wife of a Supreme Court justice. In part one of an exclusive interview with NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg, Justice Ginsburg discussed the book and her life on the Supreme Court.
Justice Ginsburg stumbled upon the manuscript in the Library of Congress while doing research for a lecture on Supreme Court wives, and she was so taken with it that she finally persuaded Random House to publish it.
It's a portrait of the time. Now, Malvina came from an abolitionist family, but even she had attitudes that today we would regard as unthinkable. There was no question in her mind or her husband John's that there was a superior race.
In the early part of her memoir, Malvina portrays the Harlan family relationship with their slaves as a benevolent one, never abusing them and never putting them on the market, though the record shows that the Harlans did, in fact, sell slaves. And though John Harlan was a slave owner, like other Kentuckians, he was also a strong believer in the Union and fought against the Confederacy. When the war was over, his views on racial equality began to change.
And in the process of seeing what happened after the Civil War in his own community and the resistance to putting the Emancipation Proclamation into effect, he becomes more and more interested in promoting the equality ideal. So I think we cannot look at them with a modern eye. We must see that within their own times, they were forward-looking people. They were ahead of the rest of their community, but of course quite far behind where we are today.
Indeed, Mrs. Harlan played a significant role in one of Justice Harlan's most famous and prescient opinions. In 1875, Congress passed a law banning racial discrimination in places of public accommodation, from restaurants to trains. Later, the Supreme Court struck down the law as unconstitutional.
John Marshall Harlan was the sole dissenter, and he was having a lot of trouble writing his dissent.
A few months before, Justice Harlan, a collector of court memorabilia, had found an inkwell used by Chief Justice Roger Taney to pen the infamous Dred Scott decision. That was the ruling that precipitated the Civil War and confirmed the right of one person to hold another in bondage. When it seemed that Harlan might have to part with the inkwell used to write Dred Scott, Malvina hid it among her things.
So one Sunday morning when he was at church services, she took out the inkwell from its hiding place. She gave it a good polishing, and she put it on his writing table and took all the other inkwells off it. Her husband, when he saw that inkwell and recalled the part that it had played in retaining the shackles of slavery, she said that that made his thoughts just fly. And he wrote and he wrote, and he soon finished his dissenting opinion.
You know, he is famous for his dissents. Why are Supreme Court dissents important?
Dissents speak to a future age. It's not simply to say my colleagues are wrong and I would do it this way. The greatest dissents do become court opinions, and gradually, over time, their views become the dominant view. So that's the dissenter's hope. They aren't writing not for today, but for tomorrow.
In the early days of the court, as Justice Ginsburg observes in her foreword to the Malvina Harlan memoir, there were precious few dissents. The justices in the early days of the Republic met in Washington, and Chief Justice John Marshall arranged for them to live together at a boarding house. He used the communal living to foster consensus and unanimity. That unanimity, Justice Ginsburg suggests in her foreword, won important respect for the new third branch of government.
Today, when there are so many important decisions on this court that are decided by a 5-4 vote, I wonder if you think it harms the respect for the court.
It shows the security that we now have in the place of the court in the nation and the acceptance of the candor of the justices. That contrasts with most courts abroad. Most courts abroad do not publish dissents. They don't even indicate that there was any dissenting vote. And yet when we talk to our counterparts on other courts and we ask, in fact, they are often the same 5-4 that we are, but we think that the U.S. public understands the court well enough to want honesty rather than the suppression of what the justices' views really are.
Tell me, how do you feel when you are on the dissenting side? Are you ever angry?
Not angry, but disappointed, both disappointed and hopeful, because some of my favorite opinions are dissenting opinions. I will not live to see what becomes of them, but I remain hopeful. So, of course, you wish that you could twist someone's arm and get one more vote when it's a 5-4 vote, but you do the best you can to make your side as persuasive as you can.
The task is different and more collaborative when a justice writes for the majority.
You remember that you are writing for the court. In all the years that I've been here, I have never written an opinion for the court that has come out exactly as I would have written it were I queen. And yet when I look back over my opinions, I have to say that most of them profited from my colleagues' comments.
Malvina Harlan's memoir also talks about the politics of her time, including the Hayes-Tilden election of 1876, an election so close that no one knew the outcome. Sound familiar? That election even hinged on contested votes in Florida. In 1876, however, a commission was appointed to determine the winner. When you read that passage, did it remind you, in fact, of Bush versus Gore?
It certainly had similarities, but it was Congress that provided for that commission.
The point being that Congress can resolve these things?
Well, it did in that instance. In fact, it provided a law that was supposed to guide similar controversies in the future, a law that provided for a decision by Congress.
You know, when Bush versus Gore was decided, there were some very hard words in the majority, dissent, etc., in the footnotes to each other. And there was a great effort then on the part of some members of the court to say, oh, we never disagree in bad humor. But why shouldn't you disagree in bad humor? The whole rest of the country was having a bad humor about this election. Why shouldn't you?
Whatever the tensions were that day of the Bush v. Gore decision, we knew that we had to come together for the January sitting that was fast approaching, and that all of us really do prize this institution more than our own egos. We had to go on and do the work of the court, and we did. And if you were going to bear grudges, that would not be possible. It's almost like a trust that we are bound to preserve the institution and give it to our successors in the same good condition that we received it.
Tomorrow, Justice Ginsburg talks about her own life on the court and her husband's. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.